Hello, and welcome to the Let's Talk Attachments podcast. My name is Jessica Da Silva, and I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist and an attachment coach, helping adults end their unhealthy dating patterns and create stronger, secure relationships. Attachment theory gives us insight into how we currently experience love through understanding our earlier attachment dynamics. I created this podcast as a safe space to share stories and insights on different aspects of attachment so that you can better understand how this manifests in your own life. My only request is that you listen with an open heart and an open mind. So without further ado, let's get into it. Today on the podcast, we have Kelsey Wonderland. Kelsey is a licensed therapist and a dating and relationship coach. She helps women who struggle with anxiety attract and hold on to a healthy relationship. She is also passionate about debunking the myths many of us have been taught about what a healthy relationship looks like. And in this episode, we dive deep into relationship anxiety, the realities of dating, and how to better differentiate between what is our insecurity versus what is our truth. And if you're interested in learning more about Kelsey, her courses and offerings, you can visit coaching.kelseywonderland.com or find her link in the show notes. I hope you enjoy this episode as much as I did. Welcome onto the podcast, Kelsey. I'm happy that you're here. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, of course. So I'm mostly excited to just kind of pick your brain in regards to dating and relationship anxiety. I know you really advocate for that on your platforms and just what you do with work. But mostly because attachment theory is so heavily rooted in relationship anxiety. So just kind of hearing your experience with this, I know will be helpful. So let's start with, how did you get into this work specifically, like, becoming a dating coach, working with anxiety? Tell me a little bit more about that.
Yeah. So I'm a licensed therapist and, was in private practice for a while, worked in so many different settings before that. And I just found that over and over again, I was sharing very similar things with my clients and that it related to me and my story with my own anxiety and my own anxious attachment, or maybe a little fearful avoidant relationship anxiety for sure. So I just started to have this sense of like, people need to know this. Like, why are we not taught this in school? It would have saved me so much heartache and so many like toxic relationships, just unsatisfying relationships with the wrong people, of like not even knowing what matters for long-term compatibility, so many things. So I just started to share my thoughts on Instagram a few years ago, and it's just kind of grown from there. And so to reach more people, that's kind of my goal. And I do that through Instagram and then also through my courses too, because not everybody can afford to do one-on-one, or not everybody wants to do therapy. And so sort of distilled a lot of the lessons down and put them into my online courses.
Very cool. Yeah. I feel like this work, especially if you're so passionate about it, often comes from our own experiences and wanting to share that information, transformation with others. So curious, you mentioned fearful avoidant attachment. Was that your attachment style? Is that something that you're still working through?
Yeah, I think that, so it definitely used to be maybe a blend of anxious and fearful avoidant. I would say I'm securely attached for the most part now, but I was listening to some of your episodes and there was a phrase spoken about like an echo of anxious attachment that can kind of like stick with you. So I think that, you know, we never really fully just shed all of that. So certainly sometimes I notice tendencies in fearful avoidant or anxious, but I would say for the most part now I'm secure, but I've done a lot of work to get there. And my husband has been a huge part of that too. He's been a secure base for me as well. So really grateful to be in this spot, but I remember how hard it was every time I'm talking with clients or even just getting DMs or comments. I'm like, yep, I remember that. That was me. Like, I can still feel that in my body, you know, if I think about it.
Yeah, it's so, and thank you for being transparent about that too, where it's like, you know, often people think, okay, secure attachments, it must mean that I don't experience any insecurity or any anxiety mm-hmm. anymore. And that's just not the case. It's just, we get better at responding to those triggers and things that come up for us. But also so amazing to hear that you found a partner who is that secure base for you, because that's really, really healing.
Yeah, it's been huge. And it's not to say he has some anxious tendencies for sure. And he's had some really unhealthy relationships too. And as you know, I mean, you can be securely attached with your parents and then have a relationship in adulthood or at any point in adolescence, childhood, that changes that. So that was kind of his story, is he was very securely attached and then had his own really unhealthy relationship with a person who was abusive and controlling, and that brought out a lot of anxious, fearful attachment.
Yeah. So I'm curious to know your take on, you know, how anxiety can really just kind of skew our perception of relationships or skew our perception of mm-hmm. our partner.
Yeah, really good question. So I always say I'm like an anxious soul. I mean, sure, I'm securely attached for the most part, but I just, in general with life, I'm an anxious soul. And so if you struggle with anxiety, right, it typically, I mean, some people experience anxiety only in one area of their life or mostly in one area. But I think a lot of people who are anxiously attached, especially, it's kind of pervasive actually around all areas of our life. So at least for me personally, sometimes it's sort of felt like I am anxious and then I find something to be anxious about, if that makes sense. And so, yeah, I think that our own anxiety can cause us to second guess everything and so many things in our life, including our relationships. And then I think too, you know, for me, a huge piece of it is, again, nobody ever teaches us this stuff. So we're left to our own devices to figure out what's normal and what's not in a healthy relationship, what matters for long-term compatibility and what really doesn't. So I think it's really easy for even people who don't struggle with anxiety to, you know, to get wrapped up in, is this really my person? Or the comparison of, like, you know, we see the highlight reel on social media and we're like, okay, maybe my relationship should be like that. And there's so much second guessing and overanalyzing that can go on there.
Oh my God. Yes. Looking at the highlight reels, comparing already when you have anxiety, it's, yes, we create all these stories and narratives of maybe why this isn't, you know, this isn't the right partner for me. Maybe I'm not in the right relationship because of these flaws or these icks that you tend to talk about. So how have you navigated, like, distinguishing, okay, what is anxiety versus what is truth for me?
Yeah, really good question. So a really good example of this in my life with my husband has been when we got engaged. So we talked about getting engaged, like I think many couples do these days. It's more so old fashioned that you don't know it's coming, right? So I knew it was coming. I wanted to get engaged. I was so excited about it. I picked out my own engagement ring and, like, yeah. I knew it. Yeah, I knew what it was going to look like. And I also, like, sneakily went and got a ring made for my husband for him to have his own engagement ring. We did, like, a dual proposal, which is a whole other story. But, you know, and yet the moment I was dying for him to give me the ring, I'm like, I know it's somewhere in the closet. We lived together already and I just wanted it. But the moment he got down on a knee, I was like I had a little bit of anxiety and I was happy, but I also had this, like, just this unsettled feeling that really surprised me. And so it was more to process than I expected. And so after that, I mean, that was in 2019. So in the following days after that and processing it, I realized there's nothing about him that's causing this reaction. This is actually me being anxious and kind of finding something to be anxious about, or just going into that old anxious attachment behavior of second guessing, and things like that. So I think that in that moment, I did my best to be like, let's act normal, because I didn't want to hurt my now husband's feelings. And he knows the ins and outs of my brain about all of this. And I was able to share it with him a few days later because he is a really great communicator, securely attached. Like, you know, it was sort of hurtful for him, but he didn't take it personally at the same time. Yeah. But I realized, like, after that, that relationship anxiety is a thing. And I felt so comforted and normalized to know, oh my God, like, I'm not the only one experiencing this. So what I had to separate out in my head is I don't make my decision about partnership based on just a feeling. I make it based on things that are important to me, my core values. Do we share the same worldview on things that are important to me? You know, all of that. And the feelings that I have when I was with him, spending time with him, living together with him, all of the moments outside of the big moment of engagement were positive feelings for the most part. You know, of course we had our conflict and things like that. So that's how I kind of distinguished that for myself. But I've heard from a lot of people ever since I shared about that on my Instagram that they're going through the same thing, or they're fearful that they aren't going to be able to hide that reaction in the moment and hurt their partner's feelings and, you know, so forth. So I think it's a really common thing, even though relationship anxiety is like really not talked about. So many people experience it.
I know. That actually makes me think about prior relationships that I've been in where mm-hmm. I was highly triggered, highly anxious. My partner was highly anxious, and none of us could be a secure base for each other. So mm-hmm. there was no repair. There was mm-hmm. no healing. It was just activation and activation. So yeah. I think that's why it's so important, like you kind of mentioned, right? Where having a partner where they can be understanding or try mm-hmm. to be understanding and hold space for your anxiety and your mm-hmm. experience can be mm-hmm. so healing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think it matters too, how you bring it to them. Of course, if I brought it to him, like, I feel, you know, turned off by you proposing to me or something like that, that would be harder to hear than, you know, I have this feeling and it doesn't feel like accurate for how I feel about you. And I'm trying to navigate this internally as to why I'm feeling that way, because I know that I want to take this step, you know? And so I think that that made it easier for him to hear too. I always say, like, if you express something like a negative, even narrative that you have about your partner, but you express it in such a way that you say, I don't want to have that narrative about you. And I'm not sure where that comes from inside of me. And I'm going to go take that and work on it. But I also value processing it with you if you're open. I mean, that's so different than coming at them.
Yes. And that skill, like those are skills that one has to learn is that introspection and the accountability and being able to communicate in such a mature way. A lot mm-hmm. of people lack that, which is
because nobody teaches us. It's like so frustrating. Like, that's why I do what I do, because like I have so many, I mean, I try to touch on a lot of different topics. I know you touch on mostly attachment styles and that it seems like, but I try to do kind of have my hands in all of these pots right now with my courses, because I'm like, oh, I need to put this in a course. Oh, this in a course. And this, so I have so many different things, but you know, one of them is on communication, right? And like, how do you tell the difference between passive aggressive, just straight aggressive and assertive, which is of course what we're going for, you know, and how do you approach someone in a way that makes it more likely they're going to respond in an effective way. You know, how we approach people affects how they respond. But so often it's like, well, I said what I feel and you just don't support me, but how did you say it? Right. It matters.
100%. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And us react, like, especially with having the fearful, avoidant or anxious attachment.
Yeah.
Often we can be very reactive, right?
Oh, yeah.
Very loud and accusatory in some ways. And so having to kind of check yourself and, you know, approach the situation in a more secure way. Yeah. I mean, that's the work, man. That is the work we're doing.
And it's just repetition. Yep. You know, the hardest part is when you first learn, I think, and you have that gap of awareness, but you have the awareness, but you don't have the practice or the repetition in to really see the changes yet. And my clients, what I see with them is that's the hardest part, because they can see what they're doing now. Now they know it and they're trying to change it. And even if they're successful, it's really difficult. And often in the beginning, the first time you try to do something different in a mental, emotional space in your brain, you're going to have that awareness after the fact. And then we try to bring that awareness right closer into the present moment. So that is years of, for me, it was years of practicing and piecemealing stuff together. I mean, I think all the time, thank God I became a therapist. I mean, I just don't know where else I would have learned so much of this. Even being a client in therapy, I was doing that as well at the time when we were getting engaged in things. And that was quite helpful, but it's still this piecemealing together, isn't it? Where it's like that. Yeah. I mean, that's what drove me to get onto Instagram to make courses. Like there should just be a place that people can go and learn this stuff.
Yes. Yeah. 100%. Yeah. And I'm grateful for social media in that regard where it's, yes, it's a lot of information that we're taking in. So we have to be very conscious of it, but at the same time, it's free information and it's valuable. So it's wonderful in that way.
Yeah, 100%. And what you're doing with this podcast, like, I mean, I listened to a few of the episodes and I was like, oh yes, that makes sense. Like that clicked for me. And I even, you know, I teach this stuff too, but just, you know, the way that you can talk through things in such a long format in podcasts, I think the things that you're sharing on here are worth literally thousands of dollars. So you're doing amazing work.
I appreciate you sharing that. Sometimes I'm like, I say too much or I give too much. It's interesting when you're a creator and you're like sharing, you know, information online, you don't know, okay, how much do I share? Yeah. How much do I keep to myself? So it's kind of like just mm-hmm. navigating that right now. I don't know if you feel the same way.
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely. And I'm a talker, as I'm sure you can tell. So I'm like, okay, got to get this concise so people can actually digest it, you know, or, you know, being therapists, I think there's so much to navigate there with the ethics of like sharing about your life and, you know, clients having access to that as a public account and all these things. So that's been, you know, years in the works too, for me of navigating that side of it.
Yes. Yeah. So something that I really, really like about you and your account is the fact that you are really transparent with just like stuff that goes mm-hmm. wrong in relationships. You're transparent about your flaws. You're transparent about his flaws. Like, and you use the word icks, like these icks that you mm-hmm. say to your partner. Can you tell us a little bit more about the icks and how you work with that? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is like a term that's around right now on the internet. It's like getting the ick, right? Is that phrase? So I've had some clients for sure share with me, okay, like he has all the green flags and he's kind and sensitive and vulnerable in all the right ways. But for some reason, I feel myself wanting to pump the brakes. Mm-hmm. And I mean, like, my clients, I'm in awe of them all the time of the self-awareness that's happening here for her to say, you know, I'm noticing I want to pump the brakes and I'm like, oh, he has kind of crooked teeth or like he had bad breath or he didn't wear cologne this day or just picking out those nitpicky things that, I mean, part of it is, yeah, we're taught that a relationship for life is built on attraction to each other and having fun together, basically, you know, and that's just not enough. But I think too, with this anxious attachment or fearful avoidant, there's this tendency sometimes to overfocus on the things that are not working in the relationship, or like the icks that get you turned off. And it's not fun to be like, oh, your breath smells bad, you know, but it's like, that's what real life and marriage and long-term partnership is, you know, I'm saying to my husband, please go brush your teeth or stand farther away from me. And after I work out, he's like, are you getting the shower? Like, you know, it's gross, like gross things happen. But I think when we're in that dating phase, there's so much Disney culture, romanticization of what you should feel and how attracted you should be to your partner 100% of the time to know that like, that's your person. And if you're not, if you're getting the ick about them, I think there's this narrative, like, how could they be your person? You wouldn't have the ick for somebody if they were your person. And that's just could not be further from the truth.
Wow. And it's such like a breath of fresh air, just hearing someone be transparent about the realities of a relationship and the realities of just being human. Yeah. Because I talk to a lot of people, especially those with mostly avoidant attachments, mm-hmm. right? Because they're looking for any type of flaw. Like they are just mm-hmm. hyper vigilant with the flaws in order to just stay protected and, you know, keep their space.
That makes sense. I tend to get a lot of anxiously attached folks, but it's so interesting that it's it's often said that it's the same, the other side of the same coin, right? Right? Because mine are doing the same thing, but with a different intention behind it. They're sort of like, oh my God, is this the right thing? Let me make sure everything's lined up and perfect and aligned. And if it's not, what if it's not the right relationship? Like, it's that anxious spiral. And I could see how for avoidance, it's the same thing. Like, oh, there's one thing wrong with you. I'm out. Totally. You know, yeah. Wrong in quotes. Like,
yeah. So like anxious attachments overthink it. They overthink it. And that's how they kind of sabotage. Whereas avoidance, it's kind of like, okay, what's that one thing that I can just reinforce this belief that, okay, no one's right out there for me. I'm just going to be alone. Yeah, it's manifested differently, but it's anxiety. It's just anxiety.
Yeah. The same. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So the icks. Yeah. So what would you say to a client, if they are experiencing the ick, like how do you get them to align with again, their truth or their value? Like what exactly do you tell them?
Yeah, great question. So it does come back to values, right? And it comes back to some education around what really matters for long-term compatibility. You know, like it's great if you're attracted to somebody who has abs and your partner has abs. My husband and I both had abs when we met over 6 years ago. Now we definitely don't, which isn't to say we can't, like, there's nothing wrong with that, right? But just the things that we focus on. So I would say number one, like what is the thing that you are feeling icked out about or doubtful about? And does it matter for long-term compatibility? And is it a deal breaker for you based on your values? Those would be the two big things to distinguish between, right? And so actually in the case of the client who is sharing with me, oh, he's showing all these green flags, he's a good communicator, all this stuff, but I feel myself wanting to pump the brakes. It turned out that she was onto something, and there was, as we talked, there was deeper stuff that came out in regards to the way he was speaking about women and the way he was speaking about, you know, if we had a female, like if we had a child who identified as female or identified as a girl, right? Like, and how we would move in parenting to protect her from men's gaze and all of the, and she wouldn't be able to wear certain clothes and, you know, so many things that just didn't align with her value of like equal partnership and like raising a strong, empowered female child, like so many things. So it was really helpful to parse through with that client. Okay. So you hate that you don't really like his teeth. You know, sometimes when he doesn't wear cologne, it grosses, you don't like it, turns you off. But like, what's really going on here is actually valid. Those other things, like if you were telling me truly everything else is wonderful, I would say let those smaller things go. But it was an indicator that she was kind of feeling something in the dynamic.
Wow, that's fascinating. Yeah. So okay, so that's great. So it's kind of obviously being aware of what those icks are and really getting crystal clear on what your values are.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I would say another big ick is like the way people chew.
Yeah.
Or like the way the food that they choose or some of the habits that people have, like, you know, there's this whole narrative in the dating coaching space of, you know, you want someone who takes care of themselves and that's true, but it's not true all the time. And so I think that that's one too, is like, oh, they're, you know, eating junk food or they're not like going to the gym anymore. You know, like, yeah, I mean, you do want a partner who's their own independent person, takes care of themselves. We can't do that all the time. You know, I mean, so many people fall on and off of movement or fitness habits and things like that.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. And it's also fascinating too, because, you know, when I reflect on my own personal values where I think, okay, for me, I really value growth and I really value self-development and connection and quality time. The thing is, sometimes life brings situations and circumstances where perhaps you're not totally, you can't totally be aligned with your value for whatever situational, you know, crises there is. Like, what would you say for people that are maybe going through that experience of, okay, well, how long do I stay in this situation? Because maybe this person can't align with this value as of right now.
Yes. That's a great question. Yeah. So I get that a lot. Like, you know, how do we know when conflict is insurmountable, or how do we know that we should break up? Like, I just actually created an entire course on this because of the questions that were coming in. So I think it really comes down to two things, right? It's one is, are you willing to give your partner and possibly yourself? I mean, it's a two-way street in relationships. Are you willing to give yourself and your partner an opportunity to work on it? Mm-hmm. And if you are, is your partner also open to an opportunity to work on it or willing to work on it? And then you set a time frame that's reasonable to give for that time. Or if maybe in your case, what you're saying is there's like a family emergency or there's life circumstances, right? I mean, I think that that's pretty forgivable if there's like an emergency or things like that. There's no time frame where you're like, well, you better heal from losing your parent in 30 days. No. But if it's something in the relationship dynamic or conflict dynamic that, you know, you're asking to be worked on, I think setting a time frame of 30 to 90 days is a good window to just check back in and reassess, is there progress happening? And don't leave it vague either in just, okay, we'll just check back in 30 days. Like, what is the plan for it to be worked on for both partners, you know, or maybe it's just the one partner. What is it that you're working on? How are you going to work on it? And when are we going to come back and reassess, you know? And then in 30 days, if you're like, you know what, there's progress, but it's still not as much as I would like. It's just a hard adult question for yourself of like, is this working for me? You know, that's what it really comes down to. If your partner isn't willing to work on something, are you willing to accept that? Like, is this going to work for you? You know, that's really what it comes back to. And for me, with the anxious attachment before, I was just completely unable to make a decision on my own. And so I noticed that I would call my mom, my friend, my other friend, anyone who would listen, because I didn't know how to spend time alone and I didn't know how to make decisions alone. But then you get different opinions from everybody and you're like more confused than when you started, you know? And so that's part of the secure attachment too, is learning how to make those choices based on your own values and validate your choices. Even if your mom or your best friend or your cousin would have made a different one, well, of course they would, because they have different values perhaps.
Wow. There's so
many. I don't know if I really answered your question, by the way. I sort of went in a hole of it, but you know.
Yeah, no, I like there's so many like questions that I have just from that description that you just said. But it's interesting because we have to take so much, we have to know ourselves, first of all, especially if you have that anxious attachment style. Because it's really hard to make a decision and we don't even trust ourselves because sometimes we don't even know ourselves. We're so disconnected. Mm-hmm. So it requires like a lot of getting to know who you are and really beginning to trust who you are and advocate for what it is that you want. Mm-hmm. So that assertiveness is really, really important in all of this.
So important, because otherwise what's common, right, is you're passive about it and resentment builds, or you're passive aggressive about it and resentment builds. And then there's sort of like an emotional outburst usually about it. So learning to communicate that ahead of time and say, hey, this bothers me. Like, this is the way this is how I perceive this. Like, what's your experience? You know, inviting a conversation instead of accusing, and then having just a discussion about if both people are willing to work on things. And if you both are, I mean, there's no set time frame of like, you know, if it's not better in this amount of time, you should break up. But it's, again, you knowing yourself and your limits, and where do the cons start to outweigh the pros of this relationship, you know?
Right. Again, so many pieces. It's like, we are just navigating the gray. It's just
gray. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly. And everybody wants a clear cut answer.
There is not.
There isn't one. No. So what I've decided to do is, like, you know, I was making this course recently on this topic, and I decided to just make a decision tree. That's essentially what we're talking about, right? It's like something is happening in your relationship that you're not okay with. Like, are you willing to give it time to be worked on? Whoever needs to do the work, both of you, one of you, whatever. Yes. Okay. Then is your partner willing? If yes, then okay. In after the follow-up period, you know, if there's effort but no progress, what's your limit there? Are you okay with that as long as there's effort? Or maybe there's no effort and therefore there's no progress. How are you going to accept that? Or is there effort and progress? And like, is it enough progress for you to continue staying in the relationship? But it always comes back to you, and there is no right answer, but I think there is like a flow sort of that as therapists, we talk people through all the time. And so putting that down on paper that was like the best that I could do to like distill it into one thing. Because this is, yeah, it's a frequent question that people want to know, understandably.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that breakdown too. It gives you some kind of clarity and direction if you can kind of break it out that way.
Just of how to make that decision, you know, if you were to kind of maybe go to therapy or work with a coach one-on-one, they'd kind of be walking you through hopefully probably something like that. Right. But we're not taught any of this stuff. Like nobody gave us that decision tree. I wish I had that 5 years ago.
I know.
But it saved me a lot of anxiety and worry, stress, probably wrinkles.
Yeah.
Shave years off my life with all the overthinking I used to do at like 2 a.m. about my past relationship. Yeah.
Oh my God. I feel you 100%. Yeah. Something that my relationship has taught me coming into it with doing this work and you know, cultivating a secure attachment, is relationships require a lot of flexibility. Like it just does. So for instance, if you have a lot of that avoidance, anxious attachments can be really rigid too with their expectations, but I see a lot of avoidance very rigid in terms of, okay, it's either my way or the highway. If you don't do this, then it must be this. It's very black and white. I was doing that too, right? Where I was like, oh my God, there's an ick. Oh, look at, you got upset about this, or you don't like this. It must mean that we're just not meant to be, you know, you just quickly go right to that assumption or that conclusion. I have had to learn, like, Jess, flexibility. We're human. Like relationships are going to require a lot of flexibility. The rigidity is just not going to work unless it is a complete deal breaker. Like physical abuse for me is absolute no. I won't tolerate that again. Yeah. I've experienced in the past. That's a no-no for me. So I'm curious, what are like, and I know this is subjective to everybody, but for you, if you don't mind sharing, what are like some deal breakers for you where you might not be so flexible, I guess?
Yeah. I think this is a really good point too, because we were talking about, you know, if you're willing to work on things, if at any point you decide, no, I'm not, there's this other branch. If we're thinking in terms of like a decision tree, there's another branch of like, okay, let's check that. No, is it like a true limit for yourself? Is it like an ick surface level thing that doesn't matter? You know, is it aligned with your values? Is it rigid? There's that whole other side to consider too. So I would say like, for me, if you can't, and I guess, you know, some people, there are situations where you might still say, okay, I'm open to them working on this, but maybe we need some space in the moment if there is any kind of abuse or things like that. But if I couldn't spend time with my friends or do my own thing or have my own hobbies or wear what I want to wear, that would be a deal breaker for me. If I feel like I can't do those things without getting a lot of backlash from my partner, like they want to take all of my time or, more so in a controlling manner than a like needy manner, certainly any kind of abuse. And then again, those deal breakers, you know, of like core values. I know what my core values are. Actually, when I was dating, I messaged every guy that I matched with on a dating app at some point, and this is after like years of using it and being so fed up, like most people are, like, hey, how are you? The boring conversation. You know, I asked, do you consider yourself feminist? And it was a very strategic question because at that point I had decided I was just like really getting empowered in my values and understanding like what really matters to me in a relationship and starting to work through anxious attachment. And this is before I even met my husband. And I didn't know that I was working through anxious attachment. I was just doing those things. And that in hindsight, it's so obvious, like, oh, that was the work, you know? Anyways, but it gave me exactly what I wanted to know, because for me, it was like, I know that this is a core value for me. And this is a core value that I don't want to have to explain to my partner. I want them to be like already on the same page as me, already getting it. Like I want the guy who's like, when's the next women's march? Like I'm there. That's my husband. But I got a lot of information out of asking that question. Like some men would say, no, men can't be feminists. And I'm like, okay, respect your opinion. Not a good fit. You know, some men would say like, yeah, you know, I'm open. Like, tell me more about it. You know, I was just like, I don't want to be in the educator role of that anymore. So respect that, love that you want to learn. Like, I don't want to, not a good fit, you know? And so even just nuancing that value out, like, okay, the value is feminism or equality, equal partnership, but what does that really look like? Like, you know, there's differing degrees. And then I had a lot of questions for my now husband too, in regards to like gender roles. And, you know, if we were to have kids, who would stay home and who wouldn't? And if who earns more income, does that, is that going to bother you? You know, if I become the breadwinner, at the time I was in grad school, I had no money, but, you know, anyways, I guess that's a little different. That's in the dating phase, but any of those core values, I think a lot of times people get in relationships because they were attracted to people. They had fun together. They had shared interests. And maybe 3, 6, 12 months later, years later, you're like, oh, we actually just are never going to see eye to eye on this huge issue that's really important to me. And you probably know this because I think your marriage and family, there are some issues that tend to just kind of go unresolved in marriages, and doesn't mean you have to divorce. But if it is something that's really important to you, sometimes these values aren't something that you've thought about because nobody teaches you in the dating phase.
Totally. Yeah. So, I guess my question for you, my follow-up question on that is, you know, someone that is in the dating phase right now, what would you suggest for them to, I mean, obviously values is such a big theme here. So get crystal clear on what your values are. But how, any tips on how to like approach the situation so they find a compatible person versus a momentary fling type of thing?
Really focusing on figuring out what your values are, your kind of world views is what I like to say, the way that you see the world. I mean, an example of that is like my husband and I are aligned on this idea of social constructivism, like everything's socially constructed. And I mean, that's what we actually initially connected on, because he messaged me before I could fire off my feminist question, actually. But, you know, I think worldviews have the way you see the world, right? The way you perceive problems in other people is very telling, you know. Is there like compassion there? Is there judgment there? I mean, we all have that, but I think there's different worldviews when it comes to that. Identities too, like, what do you identify with in terms of gender, in terms of so many things? So focusing on those things. And then for me, what I like to teach is to put those things right in your dating app profile if you're dating online. And don't be afraid to ask questions about it. You know, if you're serious about finding your person and you don't want to waste time, I do recommend that. And it can be like uncomfortable, but the other thing is, on dating apps, there's totally no rules. You don't have to start like you would if you were approaching someone in person. I would never walk up to someone and go, do you consider yourself feminist? You know, but like on dating apps, you can just fire off a question and people appreciate it because they're tired of the, hey, how are you? So I think being strategic, not only in knowing what you're looking for, but then trying to attract that directly to you. I know dating apps, people are like so exhausted by them and they get a bad rap. But if you curate your profile really well, they can kind of do the work for you. People who, you know, my husband saw my profile, swiped right as fast as he could, messaged me before I even, he was so excited about it. And men who were like, oh God, you know, feminism, just went right past me and I never had to deal with them, you know? So I think that's a really strategic way of calling people in that are a good fit. And then of course you want to continue to assess once you meet them. It's not like, okay, well, you met the bio, you know, stuff that I have in my bio, and then we went on a date and it was fun. But having those deeper conversations earlier on about values, about things that you're passionate about that matter to you. If there's deal breakers in regards to life goals, like around kids or career or travel or where you would want to live, you know, you want to talk about those things before you're making really, really big commitments like engagement.
Ooh, which just makes me think, like, it only reinforces this idea that it's so important to just be authentic, be who you are, so you can filter out those people and not get so disappointed by the process.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. That resonates so much for how I was when I was dating before I started to kind of develop this strategy with what I was learning in my master's program at the time. Because I think when you're anxiously attached, you don't know who you are. And so you don't know how to be yourself because you're so busy trying to please everybody. And then you're right. Like, when it doesn't work out, I mean, there was people I had one date with that it didn't work out with. And I would be in my bed crying about it because I was so invested. You're nodding your head. Yeah.
For sure.
Just getting so invested so early. I mean, it's funny because now my husband took my last name, but at the time when I was dating, I would literally, once I knew their last name, I'd try it on with my first name. I'd try it out. I'd be thinking about it. I'd be like, oh, I could be Mrs. So-and-so. And now like I kept my last name for many reasons, but you know, my husband is, he's like, I think the patriarchy requires active deconstruction. So that's why he mainly took it. But I think it's cool too, Wonderland, where he has like a complicated last name. Anyways.
I love
yeah. So like just getting attached so quick, falling fast. I was so romantic. I mean, somebody else on your podcast mentioned this about, if you've ever seen a Disney movie, you probably have some of this stuff ingrained in you where, and then if you have anxious attachment from childhood or from wherever combined with that Disney culture, it's like just the perfect storm of falling fast, having no idea if somebody's really compatible with you before you even attach to them, and then being absolutely devastated, like a crumpled up piece of paper on the floor, Taylor Swift All Too Well, like, you know, kind of vibes it when it doesn't work out. That was
100%. Yeah. Or, you know, you go into the relationship and you go through the different phases and realize, wow, like, where are the butterflies? Where are those fanciful feelings? Where, you know, and it's, the reality is it just naturally goes away. Like it doesn't feel as strong. I mean, of course there's still love, there's still sweetness in the relationship. Well, hopefully there is, but that stuff,
but it's different.
It's different.
When my husband and I started to deepen our relationship and I was still healing my anxious attachment, I remember I would say to him, oh, I wish we could go back to the beginning. And like, yeah, you know, we just would spend hours laying in bed and talking, and like I'd lay on his chest and look up at his eyes and look up at him and just be like filled with these butterflies, right? And he would say to me, I don't want to go back there. I actually think like what we're creating right now is so much deeper. And it took me a minute to really agree with him, but now I couldn't agree more. It's like a different level of love that both of us didn't know could exist. And that is the beauty of the attachment, the human attachment bonding system. It's like, I mean, we talk about it all the time. Like there's just nobody who could compete with the bond that we have for each other. It, in regards to, you know, sometimes I talk with him about like DMs or comments I get of people asking questions or sharing experiences, la, 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 you know, talking about, yes, you can feel attracted to other people, even though you're in a relationship, the attraction and finding other people attractive doesn't go away, but there's just no way anybody could compete with the bond that we've created together over the last only 6 years. You know, we're like, oh my gosh, we have our whole lives, you know? And so I definitely would never go back to the beginning now. I'm like, gosh, I was so anxious. And I mean, it was great, but it was just like, it didn't have the depth that we have now and the trust and,
yeah, that is fascinating. Yeah, it's interesting with my relationship. Also 6 years as well. I feel like we have a lot of parallels, Kelsey.
Is that about what time? Yeah. We just came up on 6 years in June.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. Yes. We're going to be 6 years in December. So it's coming up soon.
Nice. Yeah.
But it's interesting when you take the attachment styles into account, like with the fearful avoidant, for instance, the deeper the intimacy increases, the more anxiety we feel. So for instance, in the beginning of our relationship, I want to say the first 3 years, I was like in bliss mode. It was wonderful, beautiful. But as soon as we started, we bought a house together. Oh, we got engaged, right? Like these bigger commitments came into place. That's when my anxiety really started to get triggered. And I would question, wait a second, am I giving up my life? Is this the relationship? So it's interesting to hear your perspective where it's like, wow, it seems like you're in a really, really wonderful place. Whereas other people with these different attachment styles might experience even more anxiety, the more commitment and intimacy the relationship requires. Mm-hmm. So I'm in this space right now where I'm using all my tools, you know, to really navigate like, hey, Jess, is this insecurity? Or is it what you're actually wanting, right? What is trauma versus what is your truth?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 100%. Yeah. And that was me too. Like every step of the way, we moved in together quite quickly, which like, I don't recommend that everybody does. We moved in together in after 6 months of knowing each other. We signed a lease after like 4 months of knowing each other, but in an apartment, you know. And, but when we took that step, when we got engaged, when we got our house, I was like a little bit of anxiety, like, am I making the right choice? What if we get sick of each other? What if he gets sick of me? What if I get sick of him? What if I miss my single life and I want to like, just go have a single Euro trip or bestie Euro trip? Like, am I going to be able, am I losing this freedom? Right. That was a big fear for me, was losing the freedom. But as we went, I would say after engagement, buying house, the wedding was mainly like, weddings are just terrible to plan. They just make you stressed and anxious. But I was not, the one thing I was not anxious about was like getting actually married, which was so cool because I was like, woohoo, every other milestone I've not really gotten to fully enjoy because of my own stuff getting in the way of the excitement that was really there and the like gratitude and the joy and the love that was in all of those milestones. But I am proud of myself for taking those steps anyways, because I think old me would have like criticized my partner and like went back to an ex, or, you know, went and tried to find someone else and then come back later. And it's all chaotic and messy and dramatic.
Yeah. Which, yeah. Like, thank God for the skills, like, thank God for these tools that are available to us so that we can actually navigate these experiences, not sabotage our relationships.
Right. You know? 100%. I mean, I have like 11, maybe 10 courses. And I think every single one I teach some form of self-soothing skills and how to like show up for your own self in those moments of, because that was just the biggest, that's, to me, that's the biggest way you can become more securely attached without relying 100% on another person. Like whether you're in a relationship or not, learning that skill of like giving yourself what you need and figuring out, you know, what do I wish somebody could tell me right now? Like I always wanted somebody to tell me it's going to be okay. You're not going to end up getting divorced. You're good. Yes. You're not going to end up breaking up in the middle of this lease that you just signed with him. And obviously nobody can guarantee that, but building the self-trust that like, okay, well, let's play that tape to the end. Let's say we break up. Let's say we get divorced. Like I will probably take some time off of work at this point in my life, being married. That would be a pretty big deal. Right. I would, but even then, like, okay, I would maybe take some time off. I'd go back home and spend time with my family. I'd lean on my friends. I'd take myself to therapy, you know, and I don't have to know all of the things that I would do if that were to happen. I just have to know and trust that I'm a resourceful, self-led human being who will lean on other people too, to help me figure it out. And that was like, I think the biggest thing that helped me pivot my attachment outside of, you know, the security my husband, you know, was able to give me and my therapist. Just that exact narrative with myself.
Well, I'm really happy that you've come to this place. Like that's such an achievement. That's a life achievement.
It truly is. Like it's hard. I mean, there was some rough spans of time in that, you know, in that healing process. So yeah it feels well earned. Feels well earned.
For sure. And it's like a, you know, it's an ongoing journey and it gets easier, like you said, with, you know, the consistency and just making sure you keep up with your practices. It doesn't have to be perfect, but at least, you know, you're implementing it where you can. That's most important.
Yeah. That repetition.
Yep. 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 So where can people find you and your work?
Yes. I'm on Instagram at Kelsey Wonderlin. It's not Wonderland. I wish it was. That would be really cool. It's Wonderlin.
Thank you so much for listening. If you are ready to shift your attachment patterns and embody your secure self using the attachment theory framework and my favorite evidence-based strategies, you can learn more about my 8-week one-on-one attachment coaching program. And if you enjoyed this episode, please leave a rating or a comment. Hearing your feedback is extremely motivating and I always, always appreciate it. Thanks again and catch you on the next episode.